You are getting ready to listen to the voice of Dr. Roddy Ferguson,
2004 Olympian,
four-time national judo champion, Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, author, speaker, and coach.
Hey, what's going on, man? This is Dr. Roddy Ferguson, 2004 Olympian, four-time national judo champion, Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, author, speaker, and coach. And I'd like to talk to you about something that I think I've had over 40 people in the last 18 hours either text me or instant message me about the Simone Biles situation at the Olympic Games. And I really had to break the thing down into three separate categories so that we don't get the discussion conflated. And so I keep myself organized. I want to just write it down. I had to look at it from the standpoint of a parent, from the standpoint of an athlete, and from the standpoint of a coach. Now, I've had the opportunity to be the parent of two number one ranked players in the country in terms of judo. I've had the opportunity athletically to compete in college at the Division I level, football, wrestling, and track, and also go to the Olympics in 2004, compete internationally, medal at the Pan Am Championships, compete in jiu-jitsu on the athletic side. On the coaching side, I've had opportunity to coach UFC world champions, Brazilian jiu-jitsu world champions, Olympians. I had opportunity to serve as one of the advisors on the outside doing the scouting reports for Kayla Harrison, who's a two-time Olympic gold medalist. So my experiences in terms of the Olympic movement is very, very rich and with high-level sports. And in this particular introduction, I want to say this. And let me get this out of the way in the beginning. There is nothing that trumps anybody's emotional health and wellness. When it comes to emotional health, mental health, and spiritual health, that trumps everything. It trumps medals, championships, NCAA, some All-American. So you don't normally hear me talk like this because I also have a core following like some coaches do, and you get the rah, rah, rah speech. And I'm going to talk to you about something that I never talk about when it comes to the Olympic Games, because it's just not what we normally do or what we put forth when it comes to the Olympics. And I'm going to give you the truth about high-level sports, man, a high-level competition. I'm going to tell you. I'm going to give you a couple names real quick. These are all judoka. These are judo players. High-level judoka, okay? Jack Hatton, 2019, judo, committed suicide. Elena Avishenko from Russia, 2013, judo, committed suicide. Craig Fallon from Great Britain, 2019, judo, committed suicide. Claudia Howe, who I met, took pictures with at the 2010 Youth Olympics from Austria in 2011, judo, committed suicide. Narendra Singh, 2016 from India, judo, committed suicide. Robbie Gallagher, I think from also Great Britain in 2010, judo, committed suicide. Here's the thing. We can have the rah-rah-rah discussions as much as we want. Simone Biles has parents, she has family members, and she has friends, and they would all rather her be on the planet than to pursue another gold medal and put that in the casket. I am telling you, as someone who has been on the side, I've seen people pushed to the right of the bell curve. I have pushed people to the right of the bell curve. I've seen people deal with mental health issues. I've watched people in the Olympic movement fall out with family members, relationships, be emotionally and mentally scarred. I would be lying to you if I didn't tell you that I was emotionally and mentally scarred from the situation. This year was the first time in 17 years that I was able to watch the opening ceremonies from the Olympics. That was the first time I've watched the opening ceremonies at the Olympics. Never watched it. Couldn't watch it. I enjoy the discussions that I hear, and I like the the Hegelian dialectical that happens on my page that I see in social media, where people come in with their different, you know, ideals and their different thoughts and their different opinions. And what I want to do is I kind of want to synthesize everything here so that you kind of get a really good understanding of what's going on. My particular makeup and my person, if you know me personally, I don't have a problem saying I have my points where I'm a little bit off. I'm an extremist. I've met people like me. I hang around people like me. I enjoy being around people like me. I really have a really, really tight-knit circle outside of the circle on the periphery, because a lot of people don't understand the way we talk and the conversation that we have in the elite athlete space. And it's hard to get people to accept our reality as their reality. So let me jump into my discussion. As a parent, I have two children, Rufus and Radhi. And I have no problem saying that my ex-wife left in 2019. My divorce was 2018. My divorce was finalized in 2019. And my Olympic journey and my training, my kids, and all the things that come with that were part of all the variables on the table, which attributed to somebody saying, hey, man, I've had enough of this shit, I'm out. And I don't have a problem with that, because that's the makeup of my person. I appreciate who I am, what I got, and what's available. And I also know what my children have available too. This is Roddy Ferguson, 100% exposed. I'm 100% exposed. I'm fully naked, okay? I know genetically what my children have on the inside of them, because I know where my dad came from. I know his athletic background. I know what was required to get me where I am, and I know what's required to get my kids where they are, if that's where they want to be. In the beginning, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, children aren't making the decisions for themselves. Like, somebody was doing this crazy comparison of me and Simone Biles. There's no comparison of me and Simone Biles. We're two different people, two different sports, it's just two different things. But at the age of 4, 5, and 6, Simone has to be tumbling, and she has, well, 3 really, she has to be tumbling and rolling and in a gymnastics program, and she's not making that decision early. Her parents are making that for her. And people think that kids have this situation where they get to finally choose what they want to do, and that's not what happens. Parents choose for their kids early based upon their background, their experiences, and their knowledge, and then they push them in the direction that they should go, and in doing the thing that's going to give them the greatest amount of depth and breadth possible to choose. Case in point, my mom put me in dancing and in tap early. Why? Good footwork, good for football, good for wrestling, good for judo, good for all those particular things. Did I do tumbling early? Yes, I did tumbling early too, really early. Then I started judo really early. As a parent, you have to know what to put your child in. And then there is a small push. And there's a hard nudge. And then there's some pushback from the child of, do I want to do this or do I not want to do this? And as a parent, you have to ask yourself, how far do I want this to go as a parent? The hardest part that I see, I told you, I'm going to answer this from the standpoint of a parent, from the standpoint of an athlete, and from the standpoint of a coach. I'm going to start parent first. As a parent, you have to have the, how far do I want to push? Most parents, okay, listen very carefully. This is the bell curve, okay? This is the bell curve. Bell curve. On the left side of the bell curve, you have your people who are, they need help. Those are your special needs people. In the middle of the bell curve, you have your normal population people. On the right side of the bell curve, you have what they call talented or gifted or elite, okay? At the extreme left, okay, where the kids need assistance to get out of the car, to get into the classroom, on the extreme left, okay? It is no different than on the extreme right. You could just see the problems on the extreme left. You can't see the problems on the extreme right. The problems on the extreme right, you're not going, You cannot access the genius of, and I don't care what you say, I'm telling you what I know based upon what I studied, okay? You cannot access the genius of a Bill Cosby or a R. Kelly or any top-notch scientist or any type, without also taking with you those experiences that exist on the right side of the bell curve. There's a reason why those people are like that on that end. They're not normal people, and they're not supposed to be normal. And when you're parenting, you have to ask yourself, do I want to parent as a normal parent and make my child or allow my child to be safe? And you can play it safe as a parent. Your child could be a doctor. They could be a lawyer. They could be a pharmacist. They could be teachers. They could grow up to be philanthropists, high-end millionaires. And listen, and they will be good people, quality citizens. They'll never have an Olympic medal. They'll never make an Olympic team. They'll be a Division III, Division II, Division I person riding the pine a little bit, and they will be fine. They can go to school, be quality citizens, have families, 4 or 5 kids. They will be fine. And as a parent, you have to ask yourself, what do you want? If you choose to push your child to the right of the bell curve, understand that there's a point where it goes to the point where you can't pull the kid back. The kid is, because you've nudged and you've pushed, and now the thing's taken on a life of their own. And this is what most parents say, I just want to provide them with opportunities until they want to do it on their own. And then when they want to do it on their own, then it starts taking off. Now you're training a boxer who gets hit, pop, 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 and responds right away. So now when he's in a room and a woman hits him, he doesn't see a woman, he doesn't see a man, he gets hit, pop, 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 and he responds right away. You have to understand what you are training. And a lot of people who are speaking don't understand what's being trained. So from the standpoint of a parent, you have to ask yourself early as a parent, and this is why I highly recommend the books Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell, Talent is Overrated by Jeff Colvin, The Talent Code by Daniel Coyle, Bounce by Matt Saeed, or Enhance and Destroy, Relationship Lessons from an Elite Athlete by Rodney Ferguson. Why? Because you have to understand as a parent what you're training. I thought when I was competing that I had great emotional regulation. I got great emotional regulation. I got great emotional regulation. I got great emotional regulation because I'm able to do what needs to be done, put the stuff out of my mind and move forward. What you learn at the elite level of sports, you don't learn emotional regulation. You learn emotional detachment. And emotional detachment is great in that context, in the environment of sport. But what happens is when you understand emotional detachment on a high level, it doesn't carry over well when you get into the general population. Because I know how to emotionally detach myself based upon, it doesn't matter how I feel, it doesn't matter if I'm sick, it doesn't matter if I got to pull muscle, it doesn't matter if I'm hurt, it doesn't matter if I don't feel it. Nothing matters. The only thing that matters is I need to do what I need to do, because they tell you champions do what needs to be done when it needs to be done. And if you're not willing to die for it, then don't worry about living for it. Those are the things that you learn as an elite level athlete. Case in point, like my neck is really hurt. I got strained ligaments on the side of my neck. I was doing some Greco with a wrestler, and my head hit the wall, and my head goes to the side, and my neck snapped. Bam! I thought I broke my neck. We were doing a 45-minute grind. That's like a 45-minute match. And 16 minutes in, and I got up, and man, I completed the rest of the training session. The cameraman who was there was like, man, that was the craziest shit I've ever seen. He said, why didn't you stop? I said, I can't stop. He said, what do you mean you can't stop? I said, I can't stop. There are certain people built a certain way to do a certain thing. Now, let's move. You understand from a parent. I gave you the books that you need to read. You understand from the standpoint of a parent, all right? Let's move to the athlete side. So as an athlete, okay, as an athlete, you have to understand that what you're doing now is different than what people have done before, and it's different than what people will do after you. And athletically, there's always pressure to outdo what the people have done before you and to live up to what the people have done before you, because the previous generation always says that they're tougher than the current, and the current will think they're tougher than the next. But what we have to understand is that contextually, time changes everything. So what we thought, or what was a cool coaching style 15, 20 years ago, is not a cool coaching style now. Not jumping into the coaching just yet. What we thought was good to do athletically 15 years ago is not good to do athletically now. Now, Simone Biles and Naomi Osaka are most definitely heroes. Why? Because of the names that I mentioned earlier. These people, Jack Hatton, Elena Ivanchenko, Craig Fallon, Claudia Howe, Narendra Singh, Robbie Gallagher. And listen, I'm only mentioning judo players who have committed suicide. I'm only mentioning the high-level judo players who committed suicide. I'm not talking about other sports. These are the things that they don't talk about. These people could have had a different outcome if they were able to go somewhere, get some help, and speak out and not be called weak. Here's the thing. The generation before you, this is where we have to. You have to make space to listen to the people who don't believe what you believe. You have people who are Christian. They're hardcore Christian. They may believe that homosexuality is a sin. As somebody in the LGBTQ community, you may not believe that. Just because they don't believe what you believe, it doesn't make them homophobic. And doesn't make them hateful. They just don't believe what you believe. They don't hate you, nor are they afraid of it. They don't believe what you believe. And just like you want somebody to accept your lifestyle and accept your conceptual framework and accept how you think, you have to be tolerant to accept that somebody may not think like that. And that doesn't make them a name. Doesn't make them a name. Athletes from the generation before are going to look at the athletes now as being softer and being weaker. That's how it is. That's how they're going to look at it. It's no sense. You don't have to call anybody a name. But I do know this. I know the family of Jack Hatton. I know the family of Atlanta. I know the family of Craig, the family of Claudia, the family of Narendra, the family of, I know the family of those judo players would much rather have them here than not here. And it wasn't in vogue to have a sports psychologist back in the day. It wasn't. I had one at the Liberty Training Center. We met almost every week. Why? Because it is important to mentally calibrate. And I remember I got off the mat. It was at the Olympics, and I got off the mat. So I went to the Olympic Games in 2004. Give you the athlete story now. In 2003, I tore my lateral collateral ligament off the bone with an avulsion fracture, which means it tore and it took a piece of bone with it. And I had 9 months to get ready for the Olympic trials. So I'm lifting weights, upper body, lifting, trying to get in shape. And I end up tearing my labrum in my shoulder. So my knee was healing up. And the way they fixed my knee, they just used an Achilles tendon graft. They couldn't fix everything, so they just put an Achilles tendon graft in there. And the doctor said, listen, you're going to have to get surgery on this probably by 7 to 10 years later. I'm just letting you know, which I did have to do. He said, we got to fix it the best we can do now, so it's just good enough to go. So he fixes the leg best he can. I lift upper body, tore up my shoulders bad. I go to the Olympic Games, can't raise my hands good. I'm not practicing a lot. I got cortisone shots. I got to go to the Olympic Village and take cortisone shots. I mean, everything is hurting. I finished the opening ceremonies. I compete right after I compete, like the day after I compete, I get on the plane and go home because I'm in too much pain. I don't do the closing ceremonies. Go home, get on the operating table again, another surgery on my shoulder. I was rehabbing for 24 months. I can't even give you a period of time in the 24 months where I felt like I was well. And I'm telling you that story because my mom said this to me yesterday from an athletic standpoint. Because I was talking about the Simone Biles situation. She said, just imagine you training like you were training and then having COVID on top of that. She said, this situation that all these athletes are under in the Village is way different than anything that we've ever seen in our lifetimes. The last time we had a pandemic on the planet was like in the early 1900s. Like what we're dealing with right now with these athletes with no spectators, with no fans, and only clinging and holding on to social media, and then having to get the feedback through social media where you're accessible to everybody is putting them under some pressure that no athlete, no Olympian or no world-class athlete has ever seen at this particular level. It's just really different. And I had to take that into account when I'm looking, everything is kind of layered when I'm looking at the whole thing, because you get as an athlete, you grow up hearing the phrase, hey man, don't quit. Quitters never win. Winners never quit. You got to learn how to detach yourself from how you feel. How you feel is different than getting done what needs to be done. And you go through these particular things. You're always pushing yourself. Remember, you're pushing yourself to the right of the bell curve because you want to be what? You want to be great. But when you're chasing greatness, remember you're chasing everything that greatness provides. Great career, great results, great trauma. You get everything that greatness provides. Great experiences. Great results, great career, and you get great trauma. And all the trauma cannot be seen by everybody. Now understand this point. Now let's move further to the right of the bell curve. As an Olympian, okay, the reason why you're called an Olympian is because it's a play on the gods that exist on Mount Olympus. Like you are one of the gods. You're godlike in the things that you can do emotionally, mentally, physically, etc. If you act or behave, listen very carefully now. If you act or behave like a regular person, there's no reason to watch the Olympics. People don't tune into the Olympics to see normal people do regular shit. So contextually, understand what you're watching. Contextually, when people saw Simone Biles quit, contextually, let me say it like this. You know how you go out to eat and you save that piece of dessert, that half a piece of cake, half piece of carrot cake in the refrigerator, and you go to bed and then you wake up and around 11 o'clock on Sunday, you want to go in there, you want to finish off that last piece of carrot cake, and then somebody has gone in there and they have eaten the half piece of carrot cake and you are pissed. Why are you pissed? You would have heard black folks say, I had my mouth fixed for that carrot cake. And people get upset and they get mad because contextually, what they expected to happen did not happen. So please, those people who are defending Simone Biles, as you should, understand and give space to also to the people who there was a buildup or expectation. You know, she had the goat thing on her shoulder and she's going through the thing and she's holding the goat during the commercial. People did not expect Simone Biles to do that. It did not meet their expectation. They built up what she was in their mind. And in their mind, she's not human. She's superhuman. She literally flies through the air. Literally. And those people were let down by the decision that she made. Now, here's the thing. As an athlete, it is her decision to make. It is 100% her decision to make. Have we all competed hurt? Yes. Have we all competed with a great amount of mental stress? Yes. I was talking to my man, Terrence Tramiel, last night. Terrence Tramiel, two-time Olympic silver medalist in the hurdles, in the 110-meter hurdles. I said, Terrence, I remember when you got down in the blocks in 2008 and you knew you weren't going to win. He had a pulled hamstring before he started. He said, dog, I knew it was going to tear worse when I went over that first hurdle. I said, but you went over it anyway and you tore it good. He said, no, I tore it and I couldn't finish. I said, I watched you. And I said, and I watched the dude from China who was a 110-meter hurdler who got down in the blocks with a torn Achilles and knew he wasn't going to finish the race, came out of the blocks, first three steps, ruptured his Achilles completely. Bam. Seen it. I remember I fought on Strikeforce with a torn hamstring. I could barely walk or warm up in the back. And the priest was like, what are you going to do? I said, man, I can't pull out the fight. Now, I could pull out the fight, but I can't pull the fight. Why couldn't I pull the fight? Because in my mind, I'm thinking, people watching on Showtime, people in the stands, my family's there, the buildup of the media, it's a lot of pressure. You know what I mean? It's a lot of pressure. So everybody at the Olympics has a story. And I hear people have these arguments about comparing the mental toughness of Simone Biles. Everybody who was at the Olympic Games is... the level of mental toughness at that level is beyond earthly understanding, I'm just completely honest with you. It is beyond what you could understand. And by the time that the athlete gets there, the amount of pain and stress that they've been under is crucial. Now, I'll tell you this. Many of you have not said, let me see, do you think she will regret this decision? Mitchell, do I think that she will regret this decision? In the book, The Prophet by Khalil Gibran, he has a line in it, in the portion on friendship, where he says, the mountain to the climber is clearer from the plain. Meaning, when she steps back from this years later, she's going to see it more clearly. Now, the question is, the impact as an athlete that she's going to have on the industry as a whole. Because saying that you are stressed, I want to wait on the coaching side of judgment. Saying that you are stressed and that you're having a mental health issue and that you are being diseased is different from having a mental health disorder or mental health disease. And I think the impact that she's having right now is, this is on the coaching side, in a society that is quick to give up on marriages, quick to quit, quick to cry, quick to complain. She's giving a space and place for individuals who aren't at the right of the bell curve or aren't going as hard as she's going or don't need exactly what she needed to make an excuse to quit when they need to keep going. And there's a lesson in right? There's a lesson on the business side of stop loss. You have to know when to stop. Like, quitting is actually a thing in business. It's called stop loss. There's a time we need to stop the loss. So if she made an executive business decision for herself on a personal level to stop the loss, then that's a good business decision for her. But what I don't want is for a kid in Pop Warner to, you know, have his number called on 4th-and-1 and then to run out of the game crying, talking about there's too much stress for me to get a first down. Because there's merit in not quitting, and there's also merit in knowing when to quit. So I hope I answered that for you. On the athletic side, let me make this point on the athletic side before I move to the coaching side. You literally have to go out on a limb because that's where the fruit is. But if you've ever gone out on a limb before, you know that you can go out on that limb. If you ain't climb a tree, you're trying to climb a tree and you're close to the root, you're safe, man. If you start moving out towards the limb, that limb is fragile. It breaks, you what? You fall. If you're high enough, watch yourself now. If you're high enough and you're processed, if you're high enough in your process and you fall, you die. You have to ask yourself, as my frat brother Jason Frohn would say, when you're going for that fruit, is the juice worth the squeeze? And if the juice ain't worth the squeeze, then you need to come on down that tree and hang out on the ground with the rest of us people, us normal folk. I've said this before, and you've heard me say, when you are an elite athlete, you have to be elite cognitively, effectively, and in the psychomotor domain, not just in the psychomotor domain. Once you've had enough or you can't take anymore, there's no shame in that you can't take anymore. Listen, Simone was capped out and she says, I've done what I can do. It just so happened that it happened at the Olympic Games. As an athlete, do you feel bad if you were some of her teammates? Do you feel bad that you couldn't get a gold medal? Yeah, man. Olympians go to the games because they want to get a gold medal. Everybody has a gold medal dream. If I'm on the team with Simone Biles, I'm thinking to myself, this gold medal is guaranteed. Just like if you're on the 4x1 with Usain Bolt, you think, hey, man, this gold medal. I know I'm gonna get a medal, but this gold medal is damn near guaranteed. So from the athletic side, I understand the messaging that I received, which is the same message that she received as an athlete. Now, we're moving to the domain of coaching. You can watch me coach, okay? You can watch me coach on various days of the week, and you can say, man, that guy's a great coach, man. He has a lot of empathy for the people, man. He loves the kids, and he's nice, and he's superb. And then you can watch me coach on another day, and you can be like, man, that's toxic coaching. I mean, depending on the day that you choose, and depending on what I'm trying to pull from the athlete, depending on what I'm trying to squeeze out of the fruit at the time, depending on what the training cycle looks like. Because the word abuse means outside of use. And if what you're doing is outside of the person's utilization, it's abuse. But if what you're doing is inside the person's realm of utility, then it's not abuse. When you're training for combat sports and coaching people in a combat sports environment, very, very different. Here's what you'll notice. I don't know if you ever attended a track practice or swimming practice, high level. I'm not talking about low level, high level. Or if you've attended a wrestling practice or a judo practice or a boxing practice, you'll notice that sometimes the language and the coaching is different across the board. Why? Man, like even in gymnastics, the language is across. Listen, I'm not talking about that low level clubs. I'm talking about when you get at a high level of gymnastics, it gets a little rough. Why? You are literally talking about sports where if somebody makes an error, a small error, people die or they're paralyzed. There are certain sports that when you're coaching the sports hard the way you are because you're trying to save the athlete's life for where they're going. Because when somebody comes to me, listen, I don't know anybody who's on this thing. It's not a lot of people. I can tell you right now, I've sat parents inside my house and they sit down and they tell me this. They say, we want our kid to train to be an Olympian. And I immediately say, what do you think I tell them? Right in the comment, what do you think I say? I say, do not do it. It is a bad idea. It is going to ruin your life, is what I say. I say, do not do it. It is a bad idea. It is going to ruin your life. Now, I said, it's going to ruin the life that you know. I said, it may create a better life or it may create a worse life, but the life that you know is going to be ruined. Once you begin this process, this life is no longer available. And you, once you start it, you can't go back, man. The first day that you, listen, let's say this. Let's say you go see my man, B. Moore is here. B. Moore is on here. Okay. Danny Rodriguez is here. All right. They train high level athletes. If you talk to B. Moore, Coach B. Moore, or Sensei Danny Rodriguez on Monday, and you say you want to start training to become a world-class athlete, and Coach B is doing your dieting and nutrition, and Coach Danny is training you in judo, and you show up Tuesday for training, and the training is too hard, and you quit, if you don't think that that Tuesday will create a mental and cognitive and emotional milestone in your life traumatically, you have another thing coming, buddy. That day that you jumped in the pot and jumped out, well, it is a, and I don't mean in a bad way, I'm talking about in terms of chemistry, it is a stain in your mind forever. Forever. And when you're coaching at our level, all right, I'm not talking about getting the kid in the program and moving the kid through the developmental phases and then putting them in and trying to grow the sport and getting as many practitioners as possible. And then from that pool of athletes, grab the pool of people that you want and then put that. Listen, I've written those papers, okay? I've written those papers for the Bahamas and the training books and the manuals and all that stuff. It's true shit. It's true shit and it's bullshit, okay? Let me tell you how it really happens. How it really happens is called talent identification. Coaches go to a tournament like I went to last weekend. They sit in there and they scan the room and they say, those guys are world-class fucking athletes. Those are the ones we need to use. I need to get my hands on them and find a way to get my hands on them. So people like Jimmy Pedro and Travis Stevens will create a project 2024 to go all around the country. Why? They're not going all around the country to train everybody. They're going all around the country because the main thing that I did when I was the head coach for the Bahamas, the main thing, we went to different islands because it's talent identification. I need to find out, one, who has the physical skills and has the genetic predisposition to do what I need them to do. And then two, I need to find out who the parents are. Will the parents allow me to coach? Because if the parents won't allow me to coach, the relationship is dead anyway. If you don't get the mom to buy in, I'm talking as a coach. If you don't get the mom to buy in on your coaching, I don't care what the dad says. At night at 10:30, 10:45, 11 o'clock, if she's upset for something about something and she cut that water faucet off for about 2 weeks, that dad's going to come to you and say, hey, Dr. Ferguson, I need to talk to you for a minute. You know, it's kind of, we're not stopping. We just need to back off a little bit, kind of concentrate on school, get the grades together, and then we're going to come back in and focus a little bit more on what, yeah, it's bullshit. Hey, man, I know what happened. Your wife is upset. She cut that pussy off, and now you got to come in here because you got to make a business decision about your life. I got it. I know, listen, I know how it go. I've seen it. I know how it go. Because let me tell you something. I had to tell my children this. I said, my job. I said, what's my job? He said, your job is to keep us safe. I said, no, my job is not to keep you safe. I said, your mommy's job is to keep you safe. I said, my job is to keep you alive. I said, once I keep you alive, she has the privilege of keeping you safe. I said, because understand this. And I say this to y'all. Y'all say this all the time. If there's a knock in the middle of the night, and a man and woman are in a house, and there's children in there, the man will have to get up and check on the noise and be willing to die for the family. Listen to me, man. That woman is not willing to die for you. She's willing to die for those children. Don't take it personal. That's her job. You have to be willing to die for everybody. You have to keep everybody alive. She gets to keep everybody safe. But since your kids are alive already when they're training with you as a coach, the woman is looking at safety, period. And if at any time she feels that the safety of her children are compromised during the training process, she will step in, remove the children, and the relationship is over. And that's that. That's why more often than not, when the training has to be done as a coach, it needs to be sequestered. The hard part in today's society, when we were coming up in wrestling, practices were off limits from parents, like closed door practices, like hard stuff. Like when you're trying to make a cheerleading team or something like that, closed door practices off from parents. Why? Man, you can't have parents in that sense. They have a phrase in the islands, okay? So everybody want to go to heaven, but nobody want dead. Means everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. So here's the thing. On the coaching side, I'm going to use Danny Rodriguez, okay? Danny has two sons. Him and his wife have two sons. Nick and Dominic, two sons. Danny has cried more times during their judo career than he would care to tell you. He's cried watching them train. Listen, he's cried watching them win. He's cried watching them lose. And he's cried watching them train. He's cried watching them fight each other. I'm going to tell you right now, I even know he's probably gone to practice and watched them train and had to go outside and cry and then come back inside while they're training. Because that's how hard the practices are. In the heat. Kids rolling around on the floor. Kid got a cut over the eye. Kids vomiting. And the practices are bad, man. They're bad to watch. They're bad to see. Many of you have never seen those practices. You don't know what they look like. And those practices push you to the right of the bell curve. As a coach, the hard part as a coach. And Danny Rodriguez, who's watching this, who's listening, he does not coach his kids anymore. Now, what Danny likes to say is, I can't do it anymore. You know, I let Herman do it, and I don't know. Listen, Danny could go get the books. He could study. He can go to certain places. He can study. He can coach his kids. He can. Because the knowledge is available. He's around. He could go get it. He could coach his kids. He does not want to coach his kids because pushing his kids to the right of the bell curve that hard is going to compromise his relationship with his children. So he has to let somebody else do it to preserve the relationship with his kids. Because like Barry Sanders said, somebody asked Barry Sanders if his son would be as good as him. And his reply was, I don't think my son would be as good as him because I don't have it to be the type of dad that my dad was with me. I remember watching Monday Night Football and Brett Favre was the quarterback for the Green Bay Packers, and his dad passed away. His dad passed away the day before or earlier that day. And somebody asked me, "What's going on, Bruno? Bruno Bouncers, what's going on? Good to see you, man." Somebody asked me, "Do you think Brett Favre is playing?" I said, "Do I think he's playing?" I said, "Yeah, he's playing. I mean, he's not hurt, he's playing." They said, "Even after his dad died?" I said, "Especially after his dad died." I said, "He's going to play that game." Now, we're not comparing anybody's mental trauma. That's not what I'm doing here, but I want to say this. So having a parent die and then getting on the field when people are running after you and trying to kill you and having to call plays and read defenses as a quarterback, tough job, lots of pressure, plenty of stress. Did he get out there and do it? Yep, he got out there and did it. Will there be coaches who look at the situation and say, Simone should have got out there and competed? Yes, there will be coaches that say that. And there will be people who say, no, she should not have got out there and competed. I don't know whether she should have competed or whether she should not have competed. That's not my call. That is Simone Biles' call alone. All I'm telling you is this. Simone's mental health, spiritual health, and emotional health trumps anything, and I would rather her be here than to be reading her name off of this list. To answer Mitchell Selby's question, because it just came to me now, whether she will regret it or not is based upon her personal reasoning internally of why she couldn't go. That I don't know. But I do know this. We have to respect her and her decision. And we need to respect people who don't agree with her decision. We need to respect Simone Biles' decision. And we need to respect people who don't agree with her decision. And it doesn't make them toxic. And it doesn't make them... Everybody is looking at it through a different lens. I will say it again because I don't want anybody to get anything confused with what I said who wasn't here at the beginning. There is nothing that trumps anyone's mental, emotional, and spiritual health. That trumps anything. A medal, a championship, an NCAA All-American list, all that's all foolishness. There's no parent who's here who wants their children making a decision that's going to hurt them, hurt themselves, or create a situation where they can't talk to their child anymore. That's a fact. That is a fact. And let me tell you something. I don't like hearing that phrase. So everybody's like, you know, mental health is real. Yeah, it is. I got it. But I'm going to have to use it right now. Man, that mental health is real, man. And to see how people are after the Olympics and to see how relationships are damaged and how they're created, to see that whole Olympic process, man, you got to be in it, man, and know. And I'm going to say this from a coaching standpoint. I sit here, I've coached on the, first of all, let me say this. I've made several mistakes as a coach. I have pushed people harder than they should have been pushed. I have gone farther than I should go. And I have pushed people who operated outside of themselves and have done great and amazing things. The thing about it is that you don't know until you don't know. The best thing that you can do is, and this is why, everybody wasn't made for the thing. They lie to you when you're a kid. They do. They lie to you. I got to make my point, but they lie to you. They tell you this, you can do anything that you want. What did they tell you? You could do anything that you want. That you put your what? That you put your mind to. I'm going to dealt with the same pressures
And to be honest, I don't think she will ever realize her potential.
See, that's the issue. Okay, now I want to get to that, Daryl. That's a good point. That's a good point, Daryl. Daryl made a good point. That's a good point. Shit, that's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up. I wanted to talk about that. I forgot to talk about it, but that's an excellent point that has to be mentioned, okay? Everybody says you could do anything that you put your mind to. The fact of the matter is that you cannot. That's bullshit. And that is the hard part about the Olympic process, because what you watch broken dreams, broken hopes, and some people who have broken faith, and that is the worst. Because the Bible says that faith without works is dead, and these people have faith, and then they've worked as much as they can work, and then their faith is broken. And when their faith is broken, automatically their hope is broken. Because these people go into a thing believing something so hard and so strong. And then they find out, I can be at my best. I can do my best. I can train as hard as everything can be absolutely perfect. And that's still not good enough. And let me tell you something. Most people in life never, ever have any goal like that where they can fail. And not we could try again, but fail and know I just wasn't good enough. Man, that's some heartbreaking shit. Now, I want to get to your point, Dale. Dale said about Naomi. Let's remove Naomi out of it, because that's a little bit touchy. Let's say it like this. How does an athlete access their best without going to the right of the bell curve? It's impossible. You don't know how good you can be unless you go out there to find out how good you can be. You don't know if you can beat the Olympic champ until you go out on the mat and fight the Olympic champ. You don't. It's like a 10-year-old kid that says, I want to be an Olympic champ. Okay. So at 10 years old, we need to start training you differently than the other 10-year-olds, because you're on a different trajectory. Because in 8, 12, and 16 years, you need to be able to beat the current Olympic champ. I'm not talking about the Super Bowl champ. I'm not talking about somebody who wins the souped up national championship. I'm talking about you have to beat the guy who is the best, or the woman who is the best in the world at what they do. And let me tell you something. If you've never trained to be the best in the world at something, just go grab the Guinness Book of World Records and look at up one of those world records and try to do whatever you can do to get a world record. That's what it's like to train to be the best in the world at something. And at a minimum, it's going to take you 10 years to do it. How do you become your best? And let's ask the question, how does Naomi Osaka become her best without the media pressure, without the squeeze that provides as much juice as possible? Because we can squeeze and also bruise the fruit, but we can squeeze and we can also get the fruit or get the juice. Now, Naomi doesn't have to do all that. Naomi's going to make her money regardless. Naomi made about 50 million net worth. Naomi, she can play when she wants to play, and when she don't want to play, she don't got to play. Done. But how does she become her best? Now, from the parent side, and I'm going to have to address this again if you guys have some questions. From the parent, and I'll look up the questions. You keep running from me. I keep telling you. My Bigfoot Jitsu, come on now. One-on-one, if you don't have the mental strength, no. Okay, somebody said, if you don't have the mental strength, then why train to be an Olympian? You don't know what you don't know. So today, during the morning practice, two of my clients were on the mat, they were rolling around, and one of them just, basically he just quit.
let the guy pass the guard and get to his side, put the knee on belly, and then he submitted. I said, what happened there? Because we were talking about Simone Biles. I said, was it physical or was it mental? I said, because you didn't die. He said, it was 100% mental. I said, right, mentally you quit. Or mentally you needed to stop, because if you kept going, that you could experience some emotional trauma that you're not ready to experience right now. The load is too much for you right now. He said, correct. He said, it just wasn't worth it to me to not let him pass. I just rather get out. And listen, once the reward is no longer worth the risk, people are going to make an executive decision and business decision. They're going to get out. Simone Biles no longer believes that risk of hurting herself and injuring herself is worth the reward of a gold medal. And she has the right to say, I think I've had enough here. And people have a right to disagree with her thought process. Personally, I agree with her thought process. Because I, as a parent, want my kid to be okay. And that's it. Any other questions? Okay. I hear what you said, Paul Ramsey. You said mind over matter. Now, here's the thing. I want to close with this. If you have kids listening, this would be the time to take the kids out of the room if you don't want to hear certain type of language, because my filter is going to be 100% off on this. All right, I'm going to give you some time. I'm getting ready to go. 3, 2, 1. Some of you motherfuckers are soft. Some of you parents are soft. Some of you athletes are fucking soft. Some of you motherfuckers are quitters. Some of you motherfuckers are going to take this situation to use it as an opportunity to quit. Some of you guys are going to praise quitting, like quitting is the thing to do. Quitting is not the thing to do. Some of you aren't going to go hard. Like, there's just some of you are just fucking soft, okay? And it's okay. And there's certain spaces and places that you don't belong in, because the softies don't belong there. If you want to be a normal person and be in the normal distribution in terms of your career or your life or your sport, that's cool. Like I said in the beginning, you'll be fine with all that shit. But don't come in here with that normal motherfucking bullshit talk and try to praise quitting. Now, I'm not talking about Simone's mental health or anybody else's mental health. Mental health and mental health issues are real. Nothing is more important than mental health. Now, we can agree that nothing is more important than mental health and not fucking praise quitting at the same time. That's just that. You also, we live in a society now that does no longer wants to accept the fucking responsibilities of contracts, vows, and fucking agreements. And when you're on a team with people, you make a fucking contractual agreement, you make a fucking vow to your fucking teammates. And that has some fucking weight too. If your teammates are cool with the way you act, then fine. If they're not, that's also fine too. And people who have been on teams and won championships know that we fucking rely on the fucking captain and the fucking team. And we also know that when the fucking ship goes down, the captain goes down fucking with it. You don't get to jump off the fucking ship and swim with the boats, motherfucker. You drown with everybody else. Or don't be the fucking captain. And I can respect the fact that you get on the boat and you went to shore because people need to see you get home. But let's be clear here. And I'm going to say it again. Nothing more important than mental health. Nothing more important than emotional health. We can say that. We can respect that. And we can respect the decision that I made. And we can also talk about quitting. There is a time to quit. If you are Simone Biles and you choose to quit when she quit, Fine. 24 medals, greatest of all time. She's been through the mud. She's trained long enough. That's cool. Simone, that's cool. Bam. She's done. Either she's done or she's taken. Simone can do that shit. Simone is one of the best ever. If she wants to sit out, she can do that shit. But do not praise quitting in other environments. It is bad for fucking children. It's bad for athletes. It's bad for you. We need to make space for athletes to get with sports psych people, for them to understand the mental health issues and the pressures. Coaches, I have a fucking problem with this shit, especially in USA Judo. We take athletes who have just fucking competed and put them in coaching spaces, and they push motherfuckers too hard, and they don't know they have not taken one course in child developmental psychology, one course in human development, one course in cognitive psychology, one course in effective psychology, not one fucking course in leadership, not one course on pedagogy, not one fucking course on teaching, on curriculum instruction. They don't know shit. And want to have a fucking argument about how much judo somebody, I don't give a fuck how much judo you know if you don't know how to disseminate and inculcate information in the right doses at the right time and the importance of the right words at the right time. Yes, you can fucking coach hard if you've written down in your coaching plan, hard day, soft day, hard day, hard day, soft day, soft day, soft day, hard day, day off, hard day, day off, day off, hard day, soft day, hard day, soft day. And some days are emotionally hard and some days are physically hard. And if you don't have that shit written down in the book, you're just going in there, you're just being an ass kicker all fucking practice. And you're a dick. That's what you are. Because you don't know any better. People lining up coaching, haven't taken one fucking psych class. Not fucking one. People lining up coaching. Don't understand anything about curriculum development or how to put a class or learn a lesson plan together. Not one. Not one fucking, not one nutrition class. Not one. Not one. Not one. Don't have a clue what to do. Just think it's about going hard. It's not about going hard. If you're going to coach at that level, you need to have more information than just how to do your sport. You need more than that. You have to have more than that. As an athlete, the whole time that you come up as an athlete, from young, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 21, 22, 23, the whole time that you come up as an athlete, the whole thing that you're going to understand is do not quit. Do not quit. Do not quit. And the reason why you're going to hear that is because if you fucking quit, you're never going to become what you need to become. And whenever you fucking stop is when you stop. That's why people ask, why don't you believe in burnout? I don't believe in burnout because there's only so many motherfuckers that can exist at the top. And when you've gone as far as you can go, you're done. That's not burnout. You're just done. You can say it burnt out if you want to. Everybody doesn't belong at the top. So when you go and you reach as much as you can go, either you reach as much as you can do physically, you reach as much as you can do emotionally, or you reach as much as you can do financially. Whenever you reach as much as you can do, you're done. You didn't burn out. You're not the one. You're not Neo. What the fuck? It's like the Matrix. Everybody's not going to make it. You go as hard and as high as you can go. And when you can't go anymore, you're done. Listen, is Simone Biles the GOAT? Is she the greatest of all time in terms of Olympic athletes? In my opinion, no. Is she the greatest of all time in gymnastics? Yes. Yes. In gymnastics? Yes. Somebody said, why isn't she the greatest of all time? That, for me, personally, that's not GOAT behavior for me. I'm not a medal copper. Somebody argued with me about how many medals she has, and you only went to one Olympics. Listen, my man, judo and wrestling and boxing. They're not like swimming and gymnastics and track and field. You don't have multiple events. Like one person can go to the Olympics and get 8 medals or 4 medals, and you can't do that. And my favorite Olympian, okay, is a guy by the name of Nomura. It's a 4-time Olympian, and I think a 4-time Olympic gold medalist. Judo, Nomura, 60 kilos. That's it. Excuse me. That's it. Yeah, to dominate that long. Yeah, man, that's it. So, I'm done, man. Some of you motherfuckers are just soft, and it's okay. And there's space for softies, too. I believe Simone Biles made the right decision. She made a decision for her personal, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. And I will tell you this, after I got done cussing and all this here on here, man, pray for everybody who went to the Olympics and pray for the families and Simone and Naomi and all those people, because to ride that emotional high and then to get dropped off at home in a week, that's another coffee with Roddy session. We're saying, Q, we need the chop. We need the what? I got to see what the Q, we need to chop it up sometime. Okay, I see that. Ashley said, let's have a talk another day. We need to talk another day. And Ashley, I need to have a talk with you. Well, you can't talk now. You're in the middle of some shit. Good shit, but I need to have you on too, because people don't know what the most people never seen what these rooms look like. They don't know what a room looks like. They don't know what a practice is like. Most people, you've never seen a world class track and field practice. Like I've been to Claremont before and seen a world class track and field. I've been to UCLA and seen world class people. I've had world class track and field clients that I train. I've seen what a world class practice looks like. I will tell you this, and people don't want to hear this. I've been to world-class competition team MMA practices, and they pale in comparison to what I've seen at a Greco practice and a freestyle practice at the Olympic Training Center. Or hard judo practice. It's not even close. I've been to hardcore Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practices, like hardcore drilling and vomiting, hardcore. There's only a few rooms that are like that in the country, in the world, in terms of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. That judo practice? No. I'm 46 years old. I will go to a hardcore Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practice with heavyweights in it like Bruno Bastos, and I'll probably get cremated in the joint, but I'd go. I'd roll, I'd push, I'd go hard. You can't pay me any money to get on the mat at a Paris camp for judo, or for a camp after the Hungarian Open or anything. I'm not getting on the mat with those. Yeah, you'll be in the hospital. I like doing Greco. You can't pay me any money to go to a Greco practice at the Olympic Training Center. I'm not doing that. I'll be in the best case scenario. I'll be in the hospital. It's just a different level. That's it. So. That's all I got for today. I hope I answered some of your questions. If you have questions later, then I can give you some answers later. But I hope I answered the question as a parent, an athlete, and a coach in terms of the topic was Simone Biles and other things that you need to know. And I wanted to give you guys some truth about the whole Olympic experience. Somebody asked me if I would do it all over again. Man, I'd do it all over again, for sure. For sure. For sure. Because the things that I got from it, pale in comparison to what I've lost. Pale. That's it. Do me a solid, though. Go to www.enhanceordestroy.com and get my book, Relationship Lessons from an Elite Athlete. Let you know how to enhance or destroy your athletic career. I really think, and that's a book that all high school and collegiate athletes should read, and parents too, because there's some decisions that we make and that we don't make that really have an impact on our relationships as it pertains to people through athletics. Just think of how your relationships have been changed and how they're morphing now through this whole Simone Biles situation. I put two different articles up on the Simone Biles situation. One talking about that she made a good decision, another one that she made a bad one. And I mean that my friends praised one of them and then they jumped all on me on the other one. I don't care either way, because I can kill them all in my bare hands, but so it doesn't bother me at all. But I just want you to see how people change based upon the things that they hear, what they read, and what they think you believe. All right? And it changes your relationships. So go to www.enhanceordestroy.com and pick that up today. And remember, I love you, but God loves you best.